that drive. Bill Lane crosses up. Van Vliet, okie doke move, and lays it up for two. Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go all the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the left side. No good. But she's going to get on a rebound. Kicks it out. Give you sight for three. No, that's good.
From local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WDND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WDND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. It's the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND. I'm Leo Stoddard, your sports director here. I'm joined by our regular team back in triple threat formation, joined by Joey Dwyer, my co-host and WZND production director, and our producer, who's making us sound better than we really are, the one and only Joe Kennedy.
You know, I always got to make you guys sound good, because normally you don't really sound that great, boys. Got it?
Joe's carrying a lot of weight.
Sounds like Joe's trying to take over the show.
Kennedy takeover coming up, 2021.
We would love to have that, but we got a great show coming up tonight. We got Ashley Santos from the ISU soccer team coming on in just a little bit. We'll have Eric Schweizer from the News and Sports team coming on to talk about his St. Louis Cardinals, maybe a little White Sox sprinkle in there, and then we'll round things out with the pick six. Great to be back in the swing of things, and we are coming in a victorious celebration because we secured the championship in the Fell Hall World Series. WZND takes the crown for the first time the game was played since 2018. We took care of business, guys. It was just a great Sunday.
And we talked about it at the end of last show, how we were just very excited to be able to get back out on the field. It's a really fun tradition. And then the vedette released a story.
Leo
with some nasty quotes coming in.
So they interviewed the captain. So it was Leo, and he was talking about, this is going to be so fun. We're all really excited. And then the TV10 captain was talking about how ZND is going to be so intimidated that we're not going to be able to do anything on the field. And then after the first inning.
So what did we put up? Like,
After the first inning, Leo asked us, he's like, guys, let's take it easy. We're up 11-1 after the first inning. Let's take it easy. So we ended up taking the win 17-11. They're going to try to tell you it's 17-12, but don't listen to them.
It's a big gap. It was a big gap in the victory.
But it was a great win, and I feel like our cohesiveness and our chemistry as a show, as well as an entire station, was influenced positively.
Yeah. Just the one gripe I have with it was there was maybe an issue with the umpire. I think he might have been paid off. Blake Hornstein of WZND and TV10 was, since he was on both staffs, was the umpire.
So are Leo and I.
But then he turned heel because in like the third or fourth inning, all of a sudden Steve Austin's theme music plays and Blake takes an at-bat for TV10. And this basically was the spur of their comeback. Yeah. So it was just a great moment, but I was not expecting that.
That was the one time I was intimidated. You saw Blake coming up with his
fancy
shades on either. No one knows he's stepping up the bat. You just see Blake Hornstein, the monster, the man, the myth, the legend. And that got me a little scared at first. And, you know, they did mount a little comeback. They put up a bunch of runs, I believe, in that later inning. Only up at three or four at one point. But then obviously took care of business. But Blake definitely put up a pop.
It's always a little chaotic when the umpire starts playing for one of these teams.
Yeah, what's going on out here? So I had to step in the ump for like a at bat.
But I do want to give a shout out. I'd be remiss if we didn't shout out the MVP for the ZND side, our boy Tim. Really coming in, he pitched a complete game.
A gem.
And he really, and in 16-inch slow pitch softball, it's harder than you think.
Runs are going to be scored in that.
I have a confession about Tim. Tim was basically a ringer. He played 2 years of college baseball at Rock Valley College, so I like wanted to make sure he played for us, that we had him. And you guys saw him in his first at-bat, he probably hit the farthest ball of the day, so like he just had a great swing, too. Like, you could tell even there he wasn't taking it, like, too seriously, but that this guy is very good at baseball. So, like, I made sure he came to the game.
So my question is, why were we wasting him at pitcher?
Yeah, he was pitching the whole time. When I saw him swing, I was like, this guy looks really good. Like, I had no idea, Leo, until he just said he played some college baseball. Like, is that even
so
fair?
Hopefully nobody from TV... If TV10 hears that, they're going to be claiming that we completely fixed the game.
Like, It was probably the best thing we had for him.
I just wanted to make sure we had someone at pitcher that could get the ball over the plate. Like,
that's a good call. And you know what? They can, if they want it, they can come get it in the spring. Yeah. We got the trophy right here.
It's on the table. We're all looking at it. Got to put up our names, put up that score.
Everybody gets a day with the trophy, kind of like the Stanley Cup.
Exactly.
It's tradition.
It's a great time. So if they want it, they can come take it. But we're here waiting.
So now that probably all 12 of our listeners changed the channel or just stopped listening, maybe we should get into some Illinois State sports here, because it was also a very good weekend to be back here. We had the Redbird Classic hosted at Redbird Arena, ISU Volleyball. They faced Illinois on Friday and North Texas on Friday, actually, and then Mizzou on Saturday. And it was just three really good games. They honored Dr. Linda Herman before the Illinois game on Friday. It was a cool atmosphere back at Redbird Arena. And they even dropped some new unis on Saturday, which I thought were pretty sharp.
Yeah, the white uniforms. But my takeaway from the weekend, it was a tough weekend for the Birds. First two games, they come out with losses. That first game against North Texas, they're up 2-0 in sets and end up eventually losing 3-2. So that was a really tough break for them. They really had things going, but then every single set was also just close the whole way through. I believe the margin of points was just only 4 in every set. So it was a really close game. And then Leo and I did the Illinois State call, and they got swept in sets. ISU did 3-0, but that atmosphere was awesome. And we've been at games last year, and there's no fans. The energy is just down low, and it was just great to have Redbird Stadium packed once again, and it was awesome.
And Sorry, Leo.
I was just going to say even more, like, the atmosphere pregame, too, with the Linda Herman celebration. Yeah. Linda Herman, former ISU volleyball coach, as well as she served a couple of stints as interim athletic director, worked in the administration for Illinois State, trailblazer within Title IX, not just in Illinois State, but across the NCAA. Had her banner raised in the arena. So it was so cool seeing so many former athletes come back.
Yeah.
It did feel like you were in the presence of greatness, and just the atmosphere pregame was really good. And you could kind of tell that kind of set the intensity at the start of that match as well.
Both teams, I think even like Illinois and North Texas, Missouri were also watching from the sides. They're all standing up because they all know that she was a really big part in that Title IX case. And it was a pretty cool moment to see for her, and her family also was all there. And Leo and I were courtside, got to see it right up next to her in person. So it was cool to see. And seeing that banner being raised up in the rafters there.
There was, I don't know if you caught this mix up. So between the second and third set, they had Linda back on like to wave.
Yeah.
And so she was right down at the tunnel by the court. So that's where you get the longer break for, this is inside baseball here, for broadcasting. It's a longer break. So that's when we want to like use the bathroom, get a quick snack or whatever. So I'm like hustling down the tunnel to go use the bathroom real quick. And then right as they're putting her on air, so like I had to like, just kind of sneak right by, so I didn't end up like photobombing her celebration.
Leo's on the jumbotron. It's like, look at me, guys.
As far as the actual volleyball this weekend, they went 1-2 as far as complete matches are concerned. But I do think this was a really beneficial tournament, because this is the last time they're going to play before they go into the Valley. And for a team that lost so many of their most important players, this is the kind of tournament you need to kind of gauge where you're at and be like, okay, we want to repeat again as champions. What's going to be the most efficient way that we can do that?
And if you look at the teams of the two, basically of all the tournaments the volleyball team played, this tournament was probably the one with the highest pedigree of opponent in it. Yeah. With Illinois, North Texas, I'm sure they will be ranked at the end of the year because they looked really
good.
Every
team was in the tournament last year, the NCAA tournament that was at the Redbird.
So you were facing some much better teams because they played some big schools in the past, but like these weren't teams that expect to be ranked. This was more of a real test for them, and I think this was exactly how you want to end your non-conference season, by facing teams like Illinois. Even Missouri, the team that they beat, was pretty solid, too, so it's just a good test for them.
It's a good way to end it, too. They got the Missouri victory. I feel like if they would have lost that one, that would have been not a tough blow, I would say, because they kind of are starting this new season now that it's conference play.
Yeah.
But coming to the non-conference, if they would have lost that, they would have been 3-9. That's just something about being 4-8, you know, you're kind of at that even mark, you're even wins, even losses, only 4 back, and I think Missouri Valley conference play could be really interesting. Last year, ISU was only the 3rd seed heading into the conference tournament play, so, I mean, they were the first ever 3 seed to make or win the actual Missouri Valley conference, so there's a lot of opportunities for any team that can be made this season.
And they had such a tough break last year with COVID and a little bit of an outbreak. A lot of players had to miss a lot of time. So now heading into the Valley season, they're going to make a trip to Iowa to start it off. They've got Drake on Friday, so that's tomorrow, and then they've got UNI on Saturday before they come home next weekend. And so these are two better teams in the Valley, Drake and UNI. So if you're Coach Johnson going into this weekend, like, what's the mentality coming off of the Redbird Classic? Well,
I think the biggest question going in this weekend is their health, because in the Redbird Classic, you were without Caitlin Prodzinski for the whole tournament, and then setter Caitlin Loeffler got hurt in the Illinois match. and still there's no update about either of their status. Blake Hornstein actually interviewed Coach Johnson earlier today, and there was still no info about them. And those are two key players. Prozinski was someone they counted on last year, so someone that had experience that's hurt currently. And then Leffler, being the setter, that's basically the quarterback of your court out there, so everything runs through her. So it's tough. Those are two tough players to play without. So making sure their health is that they're squared away to play soon, that's really important for the rest of the season.
Yeah, they're just going to need a couple more people to step up, I guess. I mean, they got people coming down, and those, like what Joey was saying, people were leaving. But they got a bunch of new promising young players. Tamara Otene, she kind of blew me the way she was
attacking
the net in that U of I game. And Sarah Kushner made the all-tournament team with that one. Sarah Kushner, that's always like an absolute. You always know what you're getting out of Sarah Kushner. But with some of these younger players, you don't quite know exactly what you're getting game in, game out. You know they're going to have some really outstanding games, but just the consistency, and that's going to come over time too, though.
And we saw in the Illinois game that Nora Janka basically stepped into the setter just role, serving. And Carly Nicholson as well, both of them.
Yeah.
They were doing setter by committee, and both of them really did step up. So that's important if you could have multiple players that could facilitate that way and play that role. Because even then when Leffler comes back, it's good to know that you're three deep in that role as well.
And Aaliyah Moore is another freshman who out of Arizona who is really promising, a great athlete. And so this bench, even though they lost some of that higher-end talent, they're still really deep. They've got a lot of players to work with. So even the injury problems aren't posing too much of a threat for their success this season.
I kind of like how they did the schedule, though. I don't know if they always do it kind of like this, how they're going to Iowa, then they go to Indiana in a couple of weeks. They go to Indiana State and then Evansville, both in Indiana. Have they always done the scheduling kind of like that in one weekend trip?
Kind of. So the way, remember, if you did, because I've talked to some SIDs about this from the Valley. And so the way last year went, you'd play in one city for 2 days.
Yeah, I knew that one.
But they want to go back to having where each team hosts once in the matchup. But they did like the way that it kind of eliminated travel. So they were trying to incorporate that a little more, way where you knock out, you know, schools that are in the same state, maybe not close within that same state, but are together. So that was something that the Valley is actually trying to incorporate this year. Something they took away from COVID, realized they could do a better job with.
Is that going to be the same with basketball and stuff like that? I'm not quite sure.
I don't know, actually. This is some good radio here because the MVC basketball schedules are out, but if you guys really want to hear me, like, search it up.
I don't think we really want to be into that.
Go Mike Francesa with it, but
oh my goodness,
I could, I guess.
Okay, I'm looking right now. I'm looking at the Valley schedule right now, and that is not what they're doing.
Not the case,
because the men's basketball team has at Evansville and then at Drake, which is 3 days apart.
Oh, okay.
But that's about as far away as you can get in the Valley.
That affects the players, but I'm pretty sure they would rather have that than what they had last year with the COVID season. Like,
true,
being able to travel and do things more freely. Still got to do some rules, followed by some rules and everything. But just being able to be free and kind of have that opportunity to do things, that's nice for the players and the coaches as well.
Yeah, so we'll see where that goes. We got a little off the rails in this segment, but regardless, it was good to be back. It was a good experience, the Redbird Classic. We will have some broadcasts coming up next weekend with ISU Volleyball. But we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, Ashley Santos will be on the show, so stick around for that. You're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND. Welcome back to The Red Zone. Leo Starher, Joey Dwyer, and Joe Kennedy here with recurring guest Ashley Santos from the ISU soccer team. We had Ashley back on last semester, so welcome back to The Red Zone, Ashley.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So we have to address something from the last interview.
Okay.
Because we were talking about some stuff, and you mentioned you have a world-famous brownie recipe and that you would have made some for us.
Oh, my gosh.
And you came here, and we don't see brownies. Are those on the way? Or
no, about that. I actually would love to bake, but my schedule right now is whack. Yeah. So
I'm sure.
Catch me when I'm no longer playing. I'll bring you some brownies. Joey, hold me to it.
And you know, that's okay. I'll expect it in the off-season. As soon as we're done, I'll text you. I'll be like, hey, so what about those brownies?
I got you in the off-season.
But while we're still in the season, first of all, let's talk about last game. A heartbreaking overtime loss.
Yeah.
But one of the best plays I've seen since I've been watching Redbird soccer, which was Priya Gillen's save on the penalty kick in the 89th minute after a questionable penalty call. What was the team's thought process going through that moment?
I personally was extremely upset with the referee in that moment. However, once I came down from that, and I think our team as well noticed who we had in goal, Like, I had my full trust in Priya. One thing that she also is excellent at, like, even when our old goalkeeper was here, Haley Smith, Priya would go in for PKs. Like, that's her thing. And she's been on the up and up. Like, she's getting her stride, and she's coming up big time for our team. So when I looked at it, and I was like, bro, you got this. Like, you got this. And she did. Like, she came up big. No one doubted her for a minute. I was like, guys, we got to follow our runners because it's going to come back out, and we need to make sure that second ball doesn't go in. And that's exactly what Priya did. I'm not surprised at all. I expect nothing less from her. She's big time.
Yeah, that just seems what Priya does. We're talking about the ref. There's also a couple of yellow cards accumulated into a red card.
Yep.
Is there ever just a ref? You're getting the game started. You just walk out on the field and you see this one ref that you've had before, and you're just like, well, this is gonna be a bad game.
I will say I have had my encounters with referees. There's one particularly from this season that if I ever see him again, I'm just gonna be annoyed, but I don't have too much beef with too many referees.
Okay. That's good.
In the defense of the yellow card, no one even knew she had the first yellow card. The center ref knew, and I think she had like a slight idea, but our coach didn't know. The side referees didn't know. No one on the field knew. So it was a weird situation.
Yeah, Joey,
I remember seeing it because the way that the center ref presented it in the first half.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe 20 yards away from Sydney when he presented that yellow card.
Yep.
So I didn't even know until I, like, looked at the stat sheet online who the card was even on.
Exactly.
So.
Yeah, well, when she got her second one, she started walking away and, like, looked upset, and I was like, Sid, what's wrong? Like, just take the yellow. We'll move on. We'll deal with the foul. Like, no biggie. And then she's like, no, it's a red. And I was like, what? Literally nobody knew, yeah. And it was weird because I think both of those plays he let play go on and then came back later and gave it, so
yeah.
It is what it is. Referees will always be an unfortunate part of the game, usually.
So keeping things on referees, just one more question about this. It's kind of a twofold part. What's maybe the worst thing you've done that didn't get a card called on you, and what's the softest thing that you have gotten called on?
My softest one, me referring to the ref, that I'm annoyed with this season. In Milwaukee, I got a yellow card for literally nothing. Like, I stepped to the ball, I won the ball, and she ended up falling, but I was like, that's not my problem, like, stay on your feet. I got a yellow card after. Same thing, like, play continued on, like, he let play go on, and then he, like, got all in my face with the yellow card, and I was like, that was the softest thing I've ever. I literally laughed. And I was like, I don't mean to be disrespectful, but at this point, like, that's
stupid. You just
can't
take it serious,
yeah. Yeah, and then I've over my 4 years... In my position, I've gotten away with a decent amount of, like, tackles that are probably questionable. I can't think of, like, one particular moment that I maybe got away with something. My, like, most memorable yellow card, though, was my freshman year against U of I. I had some club teammates that play for U of I as well. And it was a rainy game. It's always a battle against U of I. There's a 50-50 ball, and there's a picture of me and my teammate going in for it. And it's just a cool picture. It was definitely a yellow. I completely just bought her. But I have a picture of it, and it's one of like my most memorable yellow cards. And I'm like, yeah, I deserve that one, but like a good play.
So with a picture like that, does it go on your social media after? Were you
I
very
think
proud
it
of
is.
It, or is
yeah.
that?
Yeah, I think, and I tagged her, and I think I said, sorry, Maggie, like.
Maggie Hillman?
Yes, yeah, Maggie right. Hillman.
Yeah, okay. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
This is awful radio, but it's like, you can just see it's like an ISU jersey and an Illinois jersey and just limbs everywhere.
Yeah.
Like, it's a big collision. But we talked about last game. Looking ahead to this game, this will be your 83rd start for Illinois State Soccer, so you move in sole possession of the most starts ever in the program. Is there, like, some sort of pride that comes from that lineage, or, like, what is your feeling about that?
Honestly, like, my first thought is just, like, that's crazy. Because I think back, there's been one game in my career I didn't start as my first game my freshman year, and I always just think about that for some reason. I'm just like, like, that one gets me, right? But, like, it's just crazy to think of how far I've come, and I don't know, like, I just can't believe where I'm at playing, like, what level, and I've kept that position my whole career. I just am like, wow, that's interesting and kind of sad that I've been playing that many games and I'm now nearing the end of that career, right? That's mainly what I think about when I hear that stat. Like, when he came up to me after the game, I was like, oh my gosh, like, that means I'm getting close to being done, kind of thing. That's kind of where my mind goes, how quickly time goes.
Mm-hmm. What do you remember from game one? I know one of my coaches used to say, you don't really remember the games, you remember like the memories and practices and everything through that.
Yeah.
So what do you remember from like your first game, your first time really on campus to now?
Yeah.
ISU?
I remember the first game I didn't start just sitting there and like being upset with myself, but like, I'll get this next one. And I just remember the field. I couldn't really, I think we might have actually been playing Milwaukee, but that could be totally wrong too. I just remember the field, but I do remember the moment I got my first start. I think it was against Northwestern. I was walking down because we have scouts, and they used to show it in the scout the day before, and I walked down, and just that, like, sense of pride. Not that it's that big of a deal, but just, like, mm-hmm. to me, it was like I did what I had set out to do. Like, my first goal as an athlete here was to make an impact as a freshman. So I just remember that moment of walking down from Horton or Hancock down the little paved road, and yeah. mm-hmm. just that feeling that I had. I couldn't tell you anything about the game.
Yeah.
Not a thing, honestly. Yeah.
And like you said, you're kind of nearing the end of your career here at ISU.
Yeah.
Are there any games or moments off the field that you look back on as things that stand out, either how well you played or memories that you'll cherish, anything like that that you'll carry with you long after ISU?
Oh, yeah. The memories have been endless. I always, when I discuss like my college career with people, it sounds a lot different than most students, but I wouldn't change it for the world. The memories that I've had with teammates off the field is what I'll remember more than anything that I've done on the field. One of the funniest memories that always comes up was when we put another game against U of I, my mm-hmm. sophomore year. Haley Smith got a red card, and recently it's been coming up a lot, so that's why I think it's on the front of my brain. And I like go to rip my shirt off, thinking I have to go in on goalkeeper because red cards, you go down a player.
Yeah.
Well, it turns out this is where I learned a rule of soccer. The one person on the field that can get a substitute is our goalie. So that's like one of the funniest memories. And then I just think of all the bus rides, our trips. We were in Florida, I think, 2 years ago today, mm-hmm. and all those memories are coming up of getting stuck in rooms at a crappy Airbnb, and just those little things all carry with me, and we'll always talk about them for the rest of our lives, no doubt about it.
It's coming up to an end, but is it? Do you want to go professional or anything, or what do you want to do coming up after college?
Yeah. Well, so funny. Kate and Rachel Tejada, so the two people I'm currently tied with, they both got drafted.
Mm-hmm.
So now, like, the big thing is, oh, like, are you going to get drafted? Are you going to draft it? I don't think I am. I don't think if I could think I could potentially play overseas and play professionally in that way.
You'd want to do that?
I don't know. Honestly, yeah. That's just something that I've recently been thinking about. I don't think I would. I think I'm too scared to like just up and leave the country. And
true.
I have a little brother and I have two dogs, and I don't think I'd be able to just drop all that and go.
Mm-hmm.
I love the game, but I don't know if I could go overseas. As for drafting, I don't think that's realistic for me. There are big time players who are better than me, and I'm self aware enough to know that. Would it be a dream come true? Absolutely, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Do I think it's a realistic thing to come true? Probably not. Once I'm done, I'll probably pursue just coaching more, and then get myself involved in like a rec league or something like that.
Right.
That coaching has always been one of my dreams too. So, just kind of find the game in a different realm.
Mm-hmm.
And talking about some of those big time players that maybe drafted, or so you've talked about some memories playing against your friends. Who are some players on some opponent teams you face that you respect or that you always know it's going to be tough to play against, but they have your respect from that?
Yeah. Loyola's Abby Swanson. She's their sixth. Her and I feel like we've always had like a nice, respectful battle with each other, although we don't usually find ourselves against each other on the field. Like, there's just always been a mutual respect. Sarah Griffiths, she plays for Purdue. She was on my club team with me in high school, and she's gone through back surgeries, all types of injuries, and she's still a stud. You go look up Purdue soccer, you'll see her on there right away, number 35.
Yeah.
She's an absolute stud. I could see her going to the NWSL at some point if her body holds up for her. So those are two players that I think initially come to mind that I definitely respect, and quality players.
So you transitioned from midfield to center back. How has that been for you with that? You could say whatever, but like, that's a big difference going from the mid all the way back to the defense.
Yeah.
Spot.
I mean, in the holding mid position, like, honestly thought it was more similar to center back until I found myself in the position.
Mm-hmm.
Coach Brad has always like been in my ear probably the past 2 years, like, be prepared to potentially need to find yourself at center back, like, if something were to happen to our two center backs. He'd always like mention that. I'd every once in a while in practice take a few reps just to have some comfortability back there.
Mm-hmm.
And then when one of our center backs, Mac, ended up going out with a hamstring, Ultimately, it was me who was there to step in. It's much different than I thought it was going to be. I definitely, like, didn't realize in the holding mid only being, like, one lineup, it's crazy how much more freedom you have, like, just less pressure, too. I feel like if I lose the ball in the holding mid position, at least I have a whole line behind me. If I lose the ball in the center back position, you have a goalkeeper behind you. So that's definitely been a little bit stressful for me. But I'm getting used to it. I definitely do like the six role. I miss it, especially, like, being this final season. It does sting a little bit to not be in that role because I just kind of like to run around in there.
Yeah.
But I'd like to say I'm doing an okay job. I think I've picked up on the ropes relatively quickly. So just trying to keep finding my feet in there and hopefully lead our team to a shutout here soon is the plan.
So do you know what the plan is once Michaela's fully healthy and she's able to come back and take her center back position again?
Yeah, I don't know. She's coming back this week at practice, I think. I think it's a matter of just, like, earning your spot back, right? Because she's coming back with her hamstring health, but it's so much more than just, like, a healthy body. Needs to still be able to perform. So
right.
I'm thinking I'm in there indefinitely until someone moves me otherwise. So I just take it one game at a time. I'm not sure what their plan is, though.
So, like, growing up, did you have to play multiple different positions? Because I'm sure you were probably the best player on every team you ever played on. So was that something you were used to playing all over the field? Or was that versatility something that's come to help you in college?
Yeah, actually, I used to be a goalkeeper for a really long time. Believe it or not, I was, like, mainly a full-time goalkeeper through, like, sixth or seventh grade.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
And then I broke a finger.
Aww.
Yep. And it ended my goalkeeper career, but I was not mad about it. Turned out I was actually pretty good on the field, which I was like, okay, cool, I can run with this. I don't think, I was short. I just didn't have, like, any fear, so, like, that played into my advantage, like, younger ages. Like, I'm a little girl who would just come out and take it, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not going to be scared. So I think, but that, having been a goalkeeper for, like, a decent amount of my youth career, gave me, I think, the vision that I have on the field and my ability to communicate. And I played outside back for a bit of club, and I found myself, honestly, mainly in the sixth position, though, since I've come on the field. So outside back in the sixth is where I've mainly found myself when I did transition to field. And then when I came here, I think I was automatically in the sixth right away, and I really haven't ventured from there. I think I've played a couple minutes at center back for substitutions or just because, but honestly, I haven't been too much around the field other than that, yeah.
Did you play any other sports growing up? Because we were talking about how, like, you can take aspects of other sports you play as a kid and apply it into, like, one skill.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I couldn't find anything. I was, like, searching the website trying to see. But did you play any sports, like, in high school or even younger than that?
Yeah, well, when I was little, I did it all. You know, your parents put you in all the camps and stuff. Yeah. So I did it all. I think the three that I stuck with mainly were softball, soccer and basketball. Softball, I just got too bored because we just stood there all the time, so I think I quit somewhere like late elementary school.
Mm-hmm.
I played basketball through junior high and 2 years into high school. I wasn't very good. I'm just like my athletic ability played into my favor, so I'd be like really good on defense. I'd take it and then I'd brick it off the backboard. But it was fun. And then after sophomore year, I just didn't have the time with soccer and the commitments of soccer, so I took on more of a managerial role for the basketball team because I still like being a part of the team. Basketball for a little while. That was about it, though.
And as a Naperville guy myself,
yeah.
Is there a favorite spot or place that you get to go to? Go back home, get some food at? Or?
Yeah, honestly, I haven't been back. My family's out in Virginia now, so I don't really go back that often.
Yeah.
But Lumonati's, Lumonati's. If
I
had the chance.
Down here, like,
no, and Giordano's just isn't the same either.
Yeah,
like, Giordano's, like, it'll do you justice.
Yeah.
I was like, no, it won't. Like, no. Oh, Lumonati's, yum. Yeah, for certain.
Mm-hmm.
For
so.
Certain.
Were you from Virginia originally and then went to Naperville for a little bit and then all your family's back?
Correct, yeah. I was actually born in Virginia and then my dad works for the DEA, so he is out of either D.C. office or Chicago office, so we kind of bounced back and forth. I lived in Naperville with my mom for a while and then my mom passed away in my senior year of high school, so that's why like no one's at home in Naperville anymore, and so all my family's back out in Virginia.
Yeah.
So I have a little brother out in Virginia, my stepmom's out in Virginia, and then my older brother went to Virginia Tech.
Ooh,
but him and his girlfriend actually moved to Detroit a couple years ago. They're both big-time engineers now, making the good money in Detroit, right? I know.
Yeah.
So that's, I kind of bounce back and forth.
Okay.
Everyone gets confused with
makes
that story.
Sense. Yeah.
I'm like, Yeah, I'll explain it.
I get it now.
Yep.
We'd like to thank Ashley for coming on the show. Reminder that the soccer team plays against Southern Illinois on Saturday at 6 o'clock. Ashley will move into the sole possession of the ISU record for most starts in a career. And when we come back, Eric Schweizer will join the show to talk about some St. Louis Cardinals. That's coming up next on The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Hi, this is Paul DeYoung, former ISU Redbird, current St. Louis Cardinal. You're listening to Red Zone on WZND.
That was Paul DeYoung of the St. Louis Cardinals and of Illinois State University. And our next guest shares those things in common. Well, he doesn't play for the Cardinals. He just supports them, I guess.
Not yet, at least.
But he is wearing the sweet powder blue Cardinals jersey. It's Eric Schweizer, or as his friends call him, E. Schwizzle. He joins the show now. He's going to talk about his favorite baseball team, the St. Louis Cards. How are you doing on this fine Thursday, Eric?
I'm doing great. 12 in a row, happier. Man. I literally could not be happier.
This kid is beaming ear to ear right now. He's giddy.
About an hour
ago,
he was like, oh, yeah. It's my show now.
So for, obviously, our audience doesn't know Eric that well, but so Eric off-air, whenever he has like a, he does this thing where he gives you like a funny sports take. He'll be like, I think Taysom Hill's going to win the MVP this year. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm just kidding.
He said to me, I think the Cards are going to win the World Series this year. And I was waiting for the just kidding, but Eric is serious. He really does feel good about his Cardinals this year, and rightfully so. They've been on a roll lately. They've really been fighting for their playoff lives and put themselves in great position. So let's just talk about the past 2 weeks. What's worked for them? Why has it been such a good stretch for them lately?
It's got to be their pitching, to be honest with you. Okay. Their pitching has just come on fire in the last 15 days, 14 games to be exact. They're 13-1. 2.6 ERA, 9 saves. I mean, they've just shut down teams. Their offense have been clutch, too. That's been something that's missing all year long. Going in, like, to August, they've won, like, one game where they were behind after the eighth inning. So just not really a clutch team, but all of a sudden they're on fire, and everybody's putting in their part. Their defense has been one of the best all year, if not the best, defensively with all the speed.
Was pitching coming into the season kind of like what you were looking at as a weak point? Or did this kind of get going on in the middle of the season kind of for the Cardinals? Or how's that going?
So all offseason, they're like, oh, our depth is so good, is what they said. But then they struggled with walks like all the beginning of the season. They were leading by like 100 walks. Now they're like still tied for second, but they've really brought it back. They've only been playing people who throw strikes because they're done with the whole walking and blowing games. But, yeah, so I don't know. They went out in the trade deadline. They got guys like John Lester and J.A. Happ that made me scratch my head. Like, what are they doing? But the John Lester one specifically has paid off.
Especially for the postseason. Like, that's one of the best postseason pitchers in the past 10 years. And at that point, you maybe were thinking, like, oh, I don't know if we should do this coming from the Nationals. He was really struggling, too. Like, wasn't having this career year. And now he comes to the Cardinals. And he's put them on the map, kind of. He's got his 200th win, and everything's kind of rolling there with John Lester. So I think that's definitely a great pickup, too, especially with that experience that he brings on that team. Him and Wainwright together in the postseason, that's kind of scary to look at.
And this is one thing that the Cardinals always seem to have. It stems back to 2011, their magical run, is this September Cardinals aura around them, where they just know how to turn it on at the right time. And my dad's a Cardinals fan. So I really grew up around St. Louis baseball.
Okay.
Is there, Schweizer, is there something that, like, you feel when it gets to September and the Cardinals are, like, knocking on the door of a wild card spot? Does the heart get racing a little bit?
It gets racing, and they haven't had a losing season since, like, 2007. It's been 14 years.
That's crazy.
The second longest streak in
baseball.
Must
be nice. Must be nice, is that?
That's where I want to talk about that, because I've always... Every year, I always threaten this with, like, I'm going to renounce my White Sox fandom and pick up the Cardinals. And that's why, because you think about it, they've won World Series with so many different managers, so many different cores, and they just always they play in a relatively smaller market, but they operate like a big market team. And that brings me to my next point here. They go out and trade for players like Nolan Arenado and Paul Goldschmidt, that you can go out and get two of the best players in the league at their positions. And that really puts you over the top as well. Like, so the Cardinals aren't a team to be taken lightly with, because they have guys like that. And Goldschmidt's been on a tear as of late as well.
Yeah, and then you have Tyler O'Neill, who's batting third, a really good foundation piece right in between Goldschmidt and Arenado, who's just been clutch after clutch for them this month. Came into today batting .325 this whole entire month, and Goldschmidt batting like .350 over the past like 15 games. unreal how good they've all been playing. Then you got a guy like Tommy Edman. You probably never heard of him until a couple of years ago. He's their leadoff guy, and he's just getting on base everywhere.
That's the other thing the Cardinals do is they have a great farm system. They develop talent out of nowhere. Even Paul DeJong was like a really late round pick, and they get him up, turns into an all-star. They just find these guys that seem like they're auto-generated players off the show or something, but then end up being like serviceable major league players, and that really helps too. That's why the Cardinals are
like... It irritates me.
They are like what you think a model MLB franchise should be like. That's why I always say, like, I'm going to stop cheering for the Sox and be a Cardinals fan when I get really frustrated with them. I know I won't ever do that, but that's always the thing I threaten people with.
And the Cards also have such a good way of bringing in all this talent, like you were talking about with Goldschmidt and Arenado, but keeping their core intact. Like, Yadier Molina and Adam Wainwright have been with the Cardinals since... We were in grade school.
Long to remember.
I know. Like, these guys have been around. And, like, they held on to Chris Carpenter for forever, way back in the day. So, like, they have this system where they are able to keep these guys who are super loyal to the franchise, and they're very good for a very long time, and they build around them with talent. And I know that's, like, exactly what you're supposed to do, but they do it better than almost anyone else in the league.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's just... That's why they are where they are. That's where, like, I know, Joe, we've ragged on the Cubs about their rebuild and stuff. Yeah. I thought they were going to start operating more like the Cardinals. How, like, you're going out, you have your core, you have your Bryant, Baez, whoever, and then you go get superstar calibers to compliment them with. Mm-hmm. They didn't. Whatever. We've discussed that at length on this show. But that's just why I really enjoy the Cardinals. And so, Eric, back to this season. We've just talked about the Cardinal way and so much. Moving into the potential of the postseason, because as of right now, the Cardinals look like they'll be a wild card team, sitting at 83-69, 7.5 games back from Milwaukee. Division's not happening. I think that's fair to say. So we'll probably be a wild card team. Who do you want to see in that wild card game? Who are you afraid to see?
So honestly, I don't know if there's a good option of who you want to see. The Giants and the
Dodgers.
That's
fair. It's kind
of
like pick your poison. Yeah.
They're both going to be 100-win teams. But if my thought process is, I think you can catch the Dodgers on one bad night. I don't think you can catch them on three bad nights in a 5-game series. So I would rather just take on the Dodgers one shot. The Cardinals have had the Giants number this year, mm-hmm. so I feel more confident about a Giants series than I do about a Dodgers series.
And that's the beauty with it, though. Like, you get that one game as a wild card spot, you could almost beat any team in baseball. You still see the Pirates beating the Dodgers and night in and night out.
Weird
sometimes
things
too.
Happen
like
in
weird things
too.
Happen. That's the beauty of it. Like, especially with the game, anything can happen in that. But the Dodgers, though, that would be a tough matchup. You would have to come in right away as a wild card.
And I will say, I would hate the Cardinals for robbing us of a Giants Dodgers playoff series, because I think that would be so fun to watch. But the Cardinals are also, every time they're in the postseason, they make
electric,
some noise.
Yeah.
Exactly. So
in the NLCS, yeah.
So that would be awesome to watch. And then, do we want to talk about the only team in the MLB right now to have clinched their division so far?
I think it's fair we do.
I mean, we could.
As of today?
Happened today.
As of
the Chicago
right now,
White Sox?
As of right now, yeah.
First time since 08.
So how does that feel that they finally were able to clinch that spot today?
I mean, let's be real. It's a bad division this year. We knew this day was coming
kind
for
of
a while.
Like April. You kind of knew that
it's been a foregone conclusion, but it
theirs.
Just feels so great. Because this season's been an emotional roller coaster. Yeah. Again, we've talked about on the show when Eloy, you know, ripped his armpit out in spring training. Luis Robert gets hurt a couple weeks in the year. It seemed like the sky was falling, but we're here today. This isn't what we were building all season for. We're hoping that we have another celebration near the end of October, early November. But this is something that we have to go through in order to get that celebration. So it just does feel great that the fact that the Sox are division champs, that there's more baseball to be played this year, that it came with so much time to spare. And because the past couple weeks, they've kind of been coasting. This hasn't felt like playoff-type baseball from the White Sox. But now that they got a taste of it, remember what they're playing for. Because they coasted last week into the playoffs, last year in the playoffs, not last week, and it didn't work. They didn't flip the switch on against Oakland. That was Ricky Renteria's team. Tony La Russa knows how to manage playoff baseball. Yeah. He'll know how to bring the intensity back up come playoff time. So I'm just hoping that everybody gets healthy into the postseason, that you have all the pitchers you're counting on, all the position players that need to be healthy are healthy. Yeah. But today does feel good. It's a pre-celebration for hopefully a bigger one coming up later.
And we were talking about that before the show, is I would so much rather, now that they have the division clinched, I would so much rather they just coast into the playoffs and make sure everyone is healthy, because injuries have been an issue with this team this season, rather than really going out there to prove that, hey, we belong here and all this stuff, and then they go in a little banged up. Like, this team is one of the best teams in the league when they're all healthy.
Yeah, and the fact that there was just a stat going around Twitter recently that the Sox have only played, I think it was four games with, what was it, Abreu, Anderson, and Grandal all in the lineup, mm-hmm. and they won all of those. So, like, if you have all of them in the lineup in the playoffs, that'll be very good, but it hasn't happened much. And even with Anderson, he's been banged up the past couple of weeks, and La Russa's just been taking it easy on him. Like, I respect Tony La Russa a lot more than I thought I was at the start of the year, because he really has been doing a good job of making sure Tim Anderson, because that's your franchise right there, that he is hopefully healthy going into the playoffs. He's not trying to force him to play hurt or play through it. He's taking care of his prized players.
Yeah, I know you want him to be healthy, but do you also think that maybe it's hard sometimes in the MLB to just, when you're out, being out for a long period of time, that you just step right in and then you're just all of a sudden right back to their all-star ways?
This is Tim Anderson, though.
Yeah, but I think still, like, any player can do that,
every
I mean,
time
yeah,
he
the
plays.
Intensity, definitely, like, he's going to be that leader on the team. But like,
he plays every game like a playoff game, so I'm not too worried about him not getting
some
into
other guys,
it.
Yeah. Okay.
It's a valid question. You do worry about that, because there is, because you worry about them flipping the switch if they've been cold for 2 weeks or haven't played in a while. I just think that there's been this right mix where they've had to, other players have had to step up. Guys have gone long stretches without playing and have come in and played right away. Like, Luis Roberts looked just as good as he was pre-injury after a long layoff. So I want to be worried, but I'm not worried right now. This team, there's something special going on.
Yeah.
I don't want to get worried.
And we've also gotten to see some guys come up who wouldn't have gotten the chance to play without these injuries.
Vaughn Sheets.
Vaughn Sheets and my favorite MVP, Billy Hamilton,
who
has been so fun to watch.
Don't listen to the show we did on opening day with Brendan McInerney, because
you guys definitely did.
I definitely did. We both ripped Billy Hamilton.
You guys did not like that at all. You're like, we're just signing guys like Billy Hamilton.
Okay, but Billy Hamilton has been electric this season.
Okay, so get things wrapping up here with both all you guys, Cards, Sox. Could we see a Cards, Sox World Series
Sox
happening?
Sox and four.
I mean, okay, but that's going to be there's some tough teams that
it's gonna be tough.
Both of them have to face if they eventually do meet up there, which is...
Here's what I'll say about the AL, and I'll let Schweiz take the NL. I am not super afraid of any of the teams. Like, I think the Cardinals will have a much more difficult path. I think a lot of the strength is in the NL right now.
Yeah.
Because, like, if the season started today, the White Sox would play Houston. I'm not scared of
that.
That
scares me a little bit.
I think Houston's a lot better than what they are at right now, too.
I think Houston's probably the
They're kind of flying under
the
radar, too.
I guess,
like, no
I guess
one's
that's
talking
true.
About Houston at all.
But I'm not too concerned about Houston. The AL East doesn't really, like, they're deep. They're deep, and I get it, but, like,
they've been beating each other up
exactly.
for the past
I don't know if I'm scared of the Rays. I just, I don't know if I'm scared of the Rays. And this could just be because I'm a meatball, and Leo loves to remind me of that. But
60% that.
No, yeah, I just think that the Sox have a much easier road to the World Series than the Cardinals do.
Yeah, what about you, Schweizer?
Oh, I 100% agree. Yeah, I think the Sox catch a break with playing the Astros, because the Astros aren't really playing for, like, they're not competing with another team for their, you know, their division right now. They're pretty
right,
far ahead.
Just like the Sox, yeah.
Exactly. So they're not going to be pushing themselves the next week either. Like, the Sox are going to be resting. So both of those teams will be well rested. It'll be a good matchup. The Cardinals, the Giants, the Dodgers, even the Braves are fighting for their division right now. Like, it
and
is
East
a
is
tough,
so close. Yeah.
It is a tough road for any team right now in the National League, which is why I think they might have a little bit of a disadvantage. They might be a little bit tuckered out by the time the World Series comes around, but they are really good. They're going to be well battle tested. The Cardinals have a tough road, though. I don't know how it'll fare. I personally like our odds against the Dodgers in a play-in game.
Okay.
Though.
All right. I wish we had more time to talk about this, because
I'm
getting so excited.
We were all just looking ready to say something else.
But we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to keep Eric around because we like him that much. We're going to play the Pick 6 NFL Pick'em game. That's on the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND. Welcome Welcome back to the Red Zone. Leo Stoddard, Joe Kennedy, and Joey Dwyer with Eric Schweizer here. And it's time, you heard that sounder, it's time to play the Pick 6. Joey, you want to bring our audience up to speed on how we play this game here?
Maybe not.
Leo, I do so much. Thank you so much. So, the Pick 6. We've got 6 football games, NFL football games, that we are going to pick the winners and losers of.
All right.
At the end of every week, we tally up which ones we got right, which ones we got wrong, and they go into our season totals. The season right now, we've got a 3-way tie for first, Leo. We've got you.
Really?
Me. And the guest spot.
Okay.
Sitting at 7-5.
Who's in last?
Well, we have a 2-way tie for last. We have...
Oh, do tell.
We have our producer, Joe Kennedy, and our faculty advisor, Steve
Sees. Mean we have a 2-way tie for second? Because technically you guys are tied for first.
Looks like it's a 2-way tie for last, Leo.
I don't know. We're only 3 back, I believe, 5-7.
It's 7-5 and 5-7. So you're only 2 games.
Week 3, guys. We got to calm down here a little bit.
Oh, no. Some really close games going on here.
Absolutely.
Come on. We can't lie about that.
Let's dive right on into this. The first game, happening later tonight, the Thursday night football game, it's the Carolina Panthers versus the Houston Texans. The Thursday night games have been pretty good the past couple weeks. Yeah. This one doesn't have the same billing. I think the Panthers and Sam Darnold are going to take over this. I think they're kind of a sneaky team. Maybe not be great, but they're solid enough. I like Sam Darnold. I like what he does there. So I'm going to go with the Carolina Panthers here.
Okay. I'm going to go with the Panthers too as well, but I think the Texans will keep it close. They're starting Davis Mills, rookie quarterback, and everything. And Tyrod Taylor going down is going to affect them. But
he was looking good before.
Yeah, he was. And something about Tyrod Taylor going down and then this rookie quarterback comes in and steps up. I saw something all about it. It happens everywhere he kind of goes.
Yeah.
But I think the game's going to be close. Carolina's defense is legit. It's kind of like their 2015 defense with all that swagger they had on there. But I'm going Panthers.
I also got to go Panthers. You know, they beat up on my Saints last week, and I don't think the Texans are that good.
Yeah, it's like Leo said, this has been kind of an underwhelming start to the Pick 6 this week. We always do the primetime games, and I wish that wasn't a rule that we had set for ourselves because this one is going to be boring, but I think the Panthers are going to rout.
So we're moving into another primetime game.
Steve picked
Steve. What did he pick? This is bad radio here.
I think he definitely picked the Panthers.
He definitely picked the Panthers here. I'll pull up his text
Maybe Steve picked the Texans. Oh!
He picked the Panthers. Yeah. It's a clean
full
sweep
right there, yeah.
So we're moving into the Sunday night game. It's the Packers versus the 49ers. This is what I went back and forth a little bit on. I think I'm going to go with the Niners here. I'm just not sold on the Packers yet. I like them, but I don't know if I like them too much because they played two very different teams. One really bad, one good team. So... Mm. I think we have a better idea of what the 49ers are, and that's going to be good defense, a balanced offense. I think San Francisco is going to take this one.
Yeah, Packers coming into this week with a little bit of a short week playing on Monday night. And they got off to a good thing, good start. They finally got their offense going with Aaron Rodgers and all that. But the 49ers, they're at home, and I think their defense is really going to come out swinging and everything. And their offense also has looked really improved. It always seems like they fall with Raheem Mostert coming down on the injury, but they always have this group of running backs that's going to be keeping the thing going, always putting up rushing yards. So I'm going to go 49ers in a very close game, like 2 to 3 points. I won't be surprised at all if the Packers pull out, obviously.
Okay.
I gotta, you know, flip the script. I got to go to the Packers.
All right.
You know, I got to keep it a little bit interesting, and I think this could go anyway. I don't completely know what the 49ers are after that collapse against Detroit in week one, but they still somehow came out on top. But, you know, I got to go Packers.
And I have to go with Schweizer on this one.
Ooh.
And here's the reason. I'm not liking the 49ers because Raheem Mostert, running back, out for the year.
Yeah.
Elijah Mitchell, running back, hurt. Trey Sermon, running back, hurt. So they are down to their fourth string running back.
It's always
right
been
now.
Like that, though.
And I know, but they are never able to be super successful and beat the best teams in the league. And I think that Saints, no offense to you, Schweizer's a Saints fan, but that was a big red herring as far as how good the Packers are going to be this season.
Yeah, that's fair.
I still think they're going to be really good, and I just don't think the 49ers have the power to get past a team that has a sneaky good defense and obviously Aaron Rodgers and whatever.
Yeah, they got Rodgers.
I think it's a valid point because, you know, the 49ers, but they do it every year where they just produce just random running backs because they have a really good offensive line, a good scheme, so it doesn't matter who's
passing
running the ball.
This year is definitely a lot improved, too, as well.
So it'll be an interesting matchup, and Steve Cease is going with the Niners here, so this one's a bit divided here. This
like
is what
it.
We need more, because normally we have too many games
too many that
are just everybody
just,
picks the same, so this is good.
Yep.
This next one, I think, could be divisive in that same way. It's the Eagles versus the Cowboys on Monday night. I'm a big hater of the Dallas Cowboys, so I never like picking them in primetime games or anything. So I'm going with the Eagles here. I don't know what Jalen Hurts is yet, but I kind of like it. I think the Cowboys defense might be a little banged up as well, so I'm going with the Eagles here.
Yeah, that's going to be a close one. Jalen Hurts, he provides like running. He can pass the ball too. He can go in and out. Definitely a new look for Philadelphia they've had over the past couple years with Jalen Hurts, and he's really proved that the Philly doesn't really need to spend their draft pick next year on a quarterback. But with all that being said, I still think the Cowboys are still going to pull this one out in a close one. I think their defense is going to be able to handle Jalen Hurts, and their offense has been one of the best offenses in the league this year. Took a close one against the Bucs, and they won actually last week against the Chargers. So I think they're coming in with some momentum with that offense, and Philadelphia's defense kind of scares me. So I'm going Cowboys.
I love Dak as a passer. I don't like the Cowboys at all, but I think Dak Prescott has a ton of weapons, has a really good arm, could throw for a ton of yards this year. I like the Cowboys in this one.
I was leaning Cowboys when I first started looking at this, and then I went back and I watched the movie Invincible starring Mark Wahlberg, and so I'm going to go pick the Eagles.
You do you, Joey Dwyer. I love the strategy. Steve Cease is going with the Cowboys here. So moving on to our next game.
Oh, God.
This is a tough one. This is a really tough one.
I don't know
one.
If we should take our fandom into this one.
Yeah, if you couldn't tell, we're doing the Chicago Bears versus the Cleveland Browns. First start of Justin Fields' career. Oh, man. I'm like making my mind up live on air. This is where
you do this all the time when the Bears are playing.
Because I just don't know whether to pick for Bears or against them because I hate this team. I hate that I love them this much.
Leo,
but
here's what I'm going to tell you right now. The Bears are probably going to lose this game. So either you can pick the Browns and I'm going to tell you that you hate the Bears, or you can pick the Bears, take the loss, and you don't have to face the ridicule.
But I want to win the pick six, so I'm going to pick the Browns. Joey already tells me I hate my favorite teams enough, so this doesn't faze me.
He does.
I'm picking the Browns.
All right.
I have high hopes for Fields, but I just think not yet.
Yeah, Justin Fields started his first game. Bears offense has looked well. Their O-line has looked really good.
Yeah.
But the Browns O-line has looked insanely good. They're a little banged up on offense, but that running attack with Kareem Hunt and Nick Chubb leading the way with Baker Mayfield, too, coming in there along. I think it's going to be a close one, but the Bears get Eddie Goldman back. They're going to get up that front seven.
Oh.
And I'm going to go with the Chicago Bears this one. I don't know why. They can maybe get things going. I think there's definitely a possibility that the Bears defense is going to be able to step up, though, with that front seven now that they got the boys rolling.
And I think Justin Fields has a bright future ahead of him, but not this week. I think he's going to get a pretty happy welcome from that Browns defense, kind of show him, hey, we're really good, and I'm going to pick the Browns.
Yeah. All right, so Joe, let's run through this really quick. So Leo hates the Blackhawks. He hates the Bears. The only one left is the White Sox.
Which he used to really hate.
Yeah, now he's come around just because they're winning. Yeah. So Leo's just a bandwagon.
Joey,
White Sox.
I don't hate my teams. I'm just smarter, okay?
I'm
smart enough to think critically about
my teams. I have to think critically in every aspect of my life. I want to shut my mind off and watch the Chicago Bears beat the Cleveland Browns this Sunday. I'm all Bears all the way.
Okay.
We know who Steve's picking.
Steve picked the Cleveland Browns. Yeah. I don't think he ever picks for the Bears, but that shouldn't come as a surprise.
Never.
And our next game, this is an interesting one, as these are two teams we like here. It's the Kansas City Chiefs versus the LA Chargers. I'm a big Justin Herbert fan. I like the Chargers, but I still think the Chiefs are very good. They took a tough loss on Sunday night, and I think they're going to come out energized from that. And because the Chargers did give them a really good game in Herbert's first start last year, but then the Chiefs hung on. I think the Chiefs will take this one, though.
Yeah, Chargers have kind of had the Chiefs' number the past couple of years, getting some close games and also some wins when the Chargers were also a pretty bad football team. But both teams coming off tough losses last week, and I think that the Chiefs are going to be able to pull this one out in a close one, though, just because that Chargers' offense has really been able to propel with Herbert at the quarterback spot. And Patrick Mahomes, though, is just Patrick Mahomes. And that offense, when it comes late down in the quarter, it's kind of hard to stop. So I'm going to go Chiefs with that one.
Yeah, I don't think Patrick Mahomes is going to get his second career loss in September this week. It's in Arrowhead Stadium, so I like the Chiefs yet again to beat the Chargers.
I think what the Ravens proved last week was that the Chiefs are beatable. I just don't think the Chargers have the front seven to get it done. The Ravens were able to put so much pressure on Patrick Mahomes, and they completely shut down Clyde Edwards-Helaire. That's the blueprint to beating the Chiefs. The Chargers don't have the tools to get it done. We're going with the Chiefs.
I just think it's so tough to beat an Andy Reid coached team 2 weeks in a row. Obviously, they don't really lose two games in a row ever, especially
I can't even
Mahomes.
Remember, like,
yeah.
Has Mahomes even lost two straight games in a row as a starting quarterback?
I'm not sure. Schreiser
on the stat department. Let's find out.
That might be hard to fire right away. But
while Eric's looking that up, we'll look at Steve's pick. He went with the Chiefs here, so I think that was a clean sweep there. For our last game, we're going with a very intriguing matchup here in the NFC, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers versus the LA Rams. I liked the Rams in week one, but again, they were playing the Bears, so who knows if any of that even matters.
Mm-hmm.
The Bucs look very good this year. I'm going with them. Just because I think they have the advantage right now. If they face later in the season, maybe it'll be different. Okay. But I just don't want to pick the Rams in their stupid uniforms just yet.
Oh,
this
you don't like
season.
Them, huh?
Oh, like the bone white is what they're called? Those are so ugly.
I think it's going to be a close game, obviously. These two are one of the best offenses in the league. But Tampa Bay's defense right now just hasn't been up to speed, I feel like, at the beginning of this season. I really think they've been struggling. And LA's offense, plus their defense, LA top 10 offense and defense, it's really one of the few teams. You could even put both of those, their offense and defense, in the top five of the NFL.
Yeah.
And, like, there's not a lot of teams that really have that. And I think the Rams are going to come out to play, and I think Matthew Stafford's going to kind of exploit that defense that the Bucs have been having. It's going to be a close one, 33-30, something like that. I'm going to go with the Rams, though.
Okay.
You know, I owe it to Cooper Kupp and his fantasy production for me this year. To go with the Rams because Matthew Stafford has really added that deep ball threat that they were kind of missing. Like, Goff had a good arm. He just didn't have the accuracy that Matthew Stafford has. And then I just really love this Rams defense. And like Joe said, the Buccaneers defense just hasn't been quite as sharp. I think they'll tune that up, but not quite yet.
And I have to agree with Schweizer because I also have Cooper Kupp. And the Rams also beat the Bears, who are undisputably a very good team.
Oh, come on.
But the Bucs have just not looked like they've not looked like the Bucs of last year, at least offensively. Defensively, they're still really good. I think that they have the ability to snap and turn it right on, which makes me a little apprehensive to pick the Rams. But I love Matt Stafford, and I think it. As long as the Bucs don't turn it into extra gear for another week, I'll be okay with this pick, so I'm going Rams.
All right, Steve is also going with the Rams, so everybody's against me here. This will be fun to see how that plays out.
Oh, you are? Okay, you're going Bucs?
Oh, look at Leo.
I feel like that's going to be a really close one, though. I mean, like, all these games I feel like we picked.
This is a better slate really this week. Good, there aren't too many easy ones as there were the past couple weeks. So that's all the time we have in this show. We'd like to thank Ashley Santos for coming on, talking about Redbird soccer. She's about to break a record this weekend. We'd like to thank the great Eric Schweizer for coming on to talk some Cardinals and NFL. Always a pleasure to have him on the show.
Really quick interjection. October 6th and 13th, 2019, was the last time Patrick Mahomes lost two consecutive games.
There you have it. The best man in the stat department, the sultan of stat, if you will, Joey Dwyer there. I'd like to thank everyone for listening to the show. We'll have another great one coming up next Thursday. Hope to have some another good guests on. If you missed any part of tonight's show, you can catch it on WZND.com, where it'll be up on podcast form. And once again, we'd like to congratulate our co-workers at WZND on the Fell Hall World Series victory. That's all the time we have here this evening, so thank you for listening. We'll have a great weekend.
To hear this and other past episodes of The Red Zone again, download the Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And of course, tune into The Red Zone every Thursday at 6. Right here on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.